and just push it back or turn it back to stop.
This is recording.
Yep. Okay, welcome. And I'm going to talk about something which many of you will not be involved for a while. Doesn't matter. It's really important. I'm going to talk a little bit about the what I call it in the building trades, pro forma. Now, when I was in architectural practice and I started out and I had clients who developed apartment buildings and were talking about pro forma, I honestly didn't know what the hell they were talking about. First, I thought it's a new kind of brazier. Second, I thought it's a condition for athletes to be considered for the Olympics. Anyhow, it was not. The pro forma is an economic equation. It's a very, very simple thing to is that sharp enough, by the way? Okay, legible? We really basically talk about, as practicing architects, two kinds of buildings. One, which only has to, primarily has to function, and the other, where every square foot has to earn money. The first kind, let's assume you're doing a school or you're doing some public building and the budget is $40 million and the bids come in $45 million. It's not the end of the world. The organization can vote to collect more money, can raise funds, can increase taxes. They can do many things. It's happening all over, especially nowadays in museums. I mean, you realize that all the fancy buildings, outstandingly good architects doing museums, they come in way over budget all over the country. And they find the money. The one building type where this does not exist, which where is critical, the cost, is an apartment building. Why? Because an apartment building is, unless it's built by the government, an apartment building is built to make money. And if every square foot does not create an income, the building will not be built. Even in socialist countries where housing is built by a public agency, not by money-hungry developers, right? Even there, the equation has to work because otherwise the government is not going to build it. And if the government is going to build it and they are building more and more and more housing where they are losing money, eventually the government will go bankrupt. I mean, this happened all over under the communist regimes in Europe. They were building housing that they didn't care, you know, about the economic equation. Well, what happens when you're losing money, you don't maintain, and buildings will not maintain. Well, they can take it for a year or two or 10, but 20 years not maintaining, buildings start to fall apart and eventually serious consequences. Anyhow, that building type which needs to earn money can be very easily this kind of conveyed as an economic equation. Let's look at here is the pro forma. First, well, it consists of really three parts. There is the building cost. which includes many things. You don't really need to remember every one, but basically there is the land, there is the construction cost, there is furnishings, there is architect's fee, a very small. By the way, this will illustrate to you what a small part the architect's fee in the whole equation is. And the son of a bitches don't like to pay a little bit more to the architect, who is really the key person in making the equation work. Well, that's ages-old problem of this profession. Maybe you guys will switch to something else. I don't know. Anyhow, there are legal expenses, miscellaneous costs, marketing, you know, you have to be able to rent the building. That we call project cost. But it's also increased by the interest you pay on the construction loan, because nobody is building from cash. And you borrow money to start construction. That's not the mortgage. The mortgage companies only give the mortgage when the building is completed, and they know that it was built according to the building ordinance. This is what we call the interim loan, or the construction loan, by the local bank. This together gives the total cost of the building. And then there are two important components of the equation. One is expenses. Well, what are the expenses? It's not a mystery, really. Utilities, gas, oil, water, electricity. You have to have an engineer, doorman. You have repair and maintenance, which is significant. You have a management office, marketing costs, insurance, and unfortunately real estate taxes, which are quite high. These are the operating expenses. And the mortgage, the monthly mortgage retirement, you have to pay the mortgage payments. These are the total expense. What are the incomes? The incomes are the rent from the apartments, offices rent, commercial rent, garage rent. That's the gross income. But you must always deduct for vacancies. In the Chicago area, we've been doing about 5% average. So you take the net income minus the total expense, will tell you what was your profit, if there was a profit. So let's take a typical apartment building and go through, and I must tell you, we'll go through the equation. The exact amounts are totally immaterial, so don't worry about remembering that details, but try to remember the basic outline. First, the hard cost. Number one is the land. You have to acquire land, and land is, and by the way, I am taking here a 12 to 14 story apartment building on a good Evanston location, because I live in Evanston. 100 two bedroom units, to make it easy, about 1,200 square foot per apartment, which is good average, and 100, since there are 100 apartments, 100 parking spaces, though in some municipalities they accept less than the number of units, and about 5,000 square feet, very little commercial. Okay, the hard cost. Number one is the land. And we can take it about $100 a unit, give or take. $2,500,000. And then comes the building. And by the way, what is here about the building, I am giving you guys a way how to assume the cost of an apartment building. Let's assume you have plans, okay? You take the net units, 100 units, at 1,200 square feet, that's 120,000 square feet. That's easy. Then you have to add what we call circulation, which is the corridor, the elevators, garbage shaft, two stairs, exterior walls, about 20% of the programmed space. It's very easy to remember. So 120,000 square foot programmed, add to it 24,000, that's 144,000. You also have to figure common areas. Common areas, what are they? And 7% is by and large true, not always. Lobby, garbage room, janitor spaces, lockers, about 7% of the total, 7, 8, not, doesn't matter. And the developer wanted a little commercial, 5,000 square feet. The total is about 159,000 square feet. What should the figure cost? I figure the low average cost, which would be, say, today, $120 a square foot. 159,000 times 120 is 19 million, give or take. But you also have to figure the garage. To park 100 cars, you figure about 350 square foot per car. That includes the aisle, the parking space, ramps, everything. That for 100 cars is 35,000 square feet. And the cost, well, I'm no magician. I don't really know currently, but when I did this, if the average upstairs cost was 120 a square feet, this is a little over half of it, say $70 a square feet, the garage. That's $2,450,000. So the total hard cost, is $24 million. Okay. Now let's see what are the soft costs. Well, the biggest soft cost is to take the $24 million and pay it, which you borrowed to start construction, and pay it back. You have to pay it back as you proceed during construction. And at 7%, let's take only half. Why? Because you don't need the full money at the beginning. You don't take that construction loan in one lump. You're pretty stupid if you do it. You just take it as much you need. You borrow when you, for excavation, then you borrow for concrete, whatever, step by step. That's $840,000. The lender gets a fee to the bank. I never understood why they charge a fee. Why don't they include that in the retirement of the money? But that's a fact, 1.5%. The bankers call it 1.5 points. You have to also pay the architect, and I put it down at an incredibly low cost, 4% fee on an apartment building, on a $25 million apartment building. That's a very low fee. It really should be 5%. But I put it in at 4. There is some legal cost. There is marketing cost, you know, sales ladies and brochures and everything. And there is a big lump miscellaneous. The total cost is $2,282,000, okay? So you take the hard cost, which was the construction, and the soft cost, which is $2,200,000. It adds up to $26 million. Are we going to make money, or are we going to lose our ass? Well, let's see what happens. The income. What is the income? If I take $1,600 per apartment per month, that's a very low figure. We have 100 apartments. So it adds up to about $1,000,009. The garage, $200 a month, $240,000. Commercial, a little bit. It's about $2,000,260. But you have to figure 5% vacancy. Unfortunately, nowadays, this equation is in the wind because the vacancies are tremendously high, and that's the reason people are losing their ass. But as 5%, even the best period, you should pessimistically include. So the total income is $2,147,000. What are the expenses? We know that for salaries, utilities, maintenance, taxes, insurance, all of that is usually 40% of the income in an apartment building. So that's $858,000. And now we have a mortgage which we are retiring at 6%. That's $1,342,000. So the total expenses are $2,000,002, roughly. The income is, as we saw, is $2,147,000. The expenses are $2,000,002. We are in trouble. That's a loss of $50,000 a year. That means that developers cannot build this building. Compared to taking your money and putting it risk-free in any savings account or bond, it would be better investment or better doing it than putting it into the building. But this is a very sad case, but by and large, it's true. What can we do to improve the situation? Well, there are two things which can happen, the developer can do. First of all, we can charge higher rents. We can't build much cheaper, let's assume it would be the best, but we try to ask more rent, especially if it's in a good location. Evanston is a super location, and let's assume we get $2,000 a month for apartment. And the garage plus the commercial, it comes to $2,000,006 in round figure. The expenses, now proportionately, they're $2,380,000. There is a little bit of money. If it's marketable at $2,000 per two-bedroom apartment a month, the developer starts to make a little money. Is it a great investment? No. What is good about it is that in the Chicago area, real estate traditionally doubled its value in every 8 or 10 years. Is this still true? The economic cataclysm which we have lived through, don't know how long will it last, but under normal market conditions, the real estate grows at a faster rate than your money invested in the normal bank or other kind of devices. I'm not talking about some fantastic new company which you can invest if you're smart and you are right there at the ground floor. But basically, this could be considered the investment not as an income producer, but as a solid investment for the future, with a little bit of income, very low. So what the developers have done in the Chicago area, and that's a very interesting phenomenon. It's a phenomenon none of us understand, okay? They started, that's many years ago now, at least 30 years ago, they started something which is called the condominium, where you own your own apartment. And there are two ways you can, before I put this, you can do that. One is you can consider the building where you move in and you have only a number of shares in the building proportionate to your apartment. That is called the co-op. The co-op was born in the Chicago area to keep Jews and blacks and other not necessarily desirable people out. It's not legal anymore. There are still co-ops. I live in a co-op. As a Jew, I couldn't live there 30 years ago. But today, I was on the board 3 years ago, and then new buyers came. We are supposed to interview them. But legally, the only question you are entitled to ask, if they have the money to buy the unit, and if they don't, how they want to finance it. It's only the question of how they will pay for it. We cannot ask anything else. In fact, one of my former students, the nameless, was for a while a building commissioner in Evanston, wanted to move into a co-op across the street. And they were turned down, she and her mate. Why? Because the board found out that they were not married. They were living in sin, insanity in this day and age. Anyhow, they took the board to court, and they won, obviously. Anyhow, the developers found out that when people own the apartment, it suddenly costs work out. Now, this became possible because surveyors developed what they call a vertical survey. They can create a survey, a legal document of your apartment, only your apartment, you know. That was, they didn't know how to do that before, but now it's obvious. Usually, they include the exterior wall. It goes from corridor to party to exterior, from party wall to party wall, and they can get a legal survey of that. That allows you to own your apartment. And what's happening when you own the apartment? The hard cost of the building is the same. The soft cost will have to be increased. Why? Because to sell the apartments, you need a broker. Now, to rent the apartment, you needed the staff, but to selling is a much more complicated issue, and the real estate block, call it, insisted that brokers handle it, who get 6% commission. The legal fee has to be increased because the lawyer has more work, and the surveyor's fee has to be considerably increased to be able to provide this so-called three-dimensional survey. So the subtotal is there, which was increased. How much profit you want to make on the condo? Let's assume you want to make 15% profit compared to the previous PCS little profit. This is a major, major gain. So add 15%. You can add whatever the market can take. And if you added 15%, which is a reasonable profit, the cost per apartment is $320,000. Now that in the Evanston market for a two-bedroom apartment is a very reasonable sum. Now why does the condo work and the rental doesn't? Don't ask. This is the mystery of our century in some respects. I think condo works because people can claim ownership. It's slightly misleading concept. Now I live in a co-op, which is like a condo. The condemn building was built 82 years ago. All the previous boards were very happy not to spend money. You know, boards are happy not to go to the owners and ask for more money. Real estate management firms are very happy not to irritate boards. So instead of solving problems, they put a Band-Aid on it. The building had a lot of leaks, so they kind of smeared the joints, not tuck pointing. Tuck pointing is a major operation when you rot out the grout 3/4 inch and you replace it with new mortar. They neglected the boiler. They neglected many things. To tell you a sad story, after I moved in about 4 years later, all these problems showed themselves. So we had to spend about $160,000, 30 apartments, it's a lot of money, to fix it. One of the big problems of condominiums is that there is always deferred maintenance. Boards, owners prefer not to spend money. We are not different than any one of you. So that means that the next group of owners will have to pay for it whenever it's fixed. The other interesting problem, and I wish Mark was here because he will agree with me. You talked about professional liability insurance, I'm sure. You have, right, with Mark? It's an essential part of your practice. I mean, you can't exist without it. One of the questions asked by the insurance company about your practice, do you do condominiums? And are condominiums more than 50% of your practice? And if you do condominiums, your premiums go up, and if it's more than 50%, it goes up unbelievably high. It also created a new kind of attorney. Mark was telling me it's really disgusting. A lot of young attorneys approach condominium boards that what they got is not, it should be looked into, because no developer gets what he or she promises. Consequently, the developer, the architect, the engineer, the contractor, they all can be sued. And there I am, Mr. Attorney, who would be happy to represent you. We used to have a joke in the architecture field. What is the fastest metamorphosis in nature? It's the time it takes for a nice person, when he buys a condominium, to become an unmitigated bastard. Most condominium owners feel let down. Why? Because the condominiums, I mean, I once went once, I couldn't stand it. The salesman on one of the apartment buildings I did said, you know, it will be an education for you to come with me one Sunday when we have open house and go through the apartments. It was very interesting, I must tell you. I couldn't stand it, because at least half what he told us about the apartment, I mean, you know, to call it spacious, that's a relative term. But he was lying about things, you know. This is the best flooring you can get. Everything is the best. But not everything is the best. Very few things are the best. Most things are to make it within the economic equation. And most things are built by the lowest bidder. So, I mean, you know, it's like somebody asked one of the astronauts, how do you feel, you know, in that little thing? And he says, how would you feel that every part was built by the lowest bidder? Luckily, that's not necessarily true. Anyhow, what this lecture, and you guys are going to let go very early. I mean, this is not a long lecture. The gist of it is that it's nice to know the economic equation. You know, if you go in your own practice, the likelihood is that you get, the likelihood is that you start with a lot of small jobs. You know, bathroom remodeling, kitchen remodeling, this attic, this kind of crap. But the big buildings you will get until you are well-known or well-connected are going to be apartment buildings, not big ones necessarily. And whether they are big or small, it's the same equation, and it's really going to be important for you to not make a knowledgeable presentation, but to understand what the client is talking about. I think it's a terrible failure of schools to avoid this. I mean, that's the reason I insisted that, and Mark totally agreed, that in this course, that this course is in many respects the reality of the profession. Unfortunately, to be a designer in architecture, it's not like writing poetry. You have to be both a poet and a plumber. You have to understand both ends. You have to understand a lot of things, but one of them is the economy of this game. And with that, I will conclude, and I wish you great good luck. Are you going to look for a job after this year? Or what are you going to do? I'm curious. Anyway, raise your hand if you have a job lined up. God, these are a bunch of amputated students. No, I truly understand. I might. tell you what happened to me. I got a call from one of the students last year or the year before who graduated. And he called me and says, you know any jobs? I said, no, I don't. He said, I would like you to look at my portfolio. So I said, look, you're wasting my time. No, I just look at it. I swear to you. He put it on email, you know. I never in my life saw, and I taught for 26 years, a better, more beautiful portfolio and more realistic. It wasn't just bullshit. I mean, he really knew his stuff. So I called him. I said, I tell you what I do. Send me a print. I will call OWPNP, where I used to be a partner, and I will try to convince them to put you on the top of the list. You won't get a job now, but maybe then you... And that's what I did. I called one of the partners, and I said, look, this guy is superb. I know you're not hiring. In fact, you let about 30 people go last year. But when you hire, do me a huge favor. Take a look at him, you know. Don't hire him on my word, because I really don't know. But what I've seen, it's well worth. So the last good wish is make your portfolio as attractive as you humanly can, because very seldom will you have a chance to be personally be interviewed. Once you get to that point, you are ready in one step. But that your portfolio is the, you know, the your calling card. That's what it is. And do it well. And I wish you tremendous good luck. Okay? And if you have any questions, I'm still available. I'm getting paid for 2 hours. So.